Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Houston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight.
Forty years ago, this spring, legendary country singer Patsy Cline died at age 30 when her small plane went down on a flight to Nashville. 20 years later, a young singer from Alberta, Canada, came out with her first album, and its inspiration was all Patsy Cline. K.D. Lang and the Reclines, the group was called, and the Cline in Reclines was Patsy. 20 more years on, K.D. Lang has built a remarkable career on the explicit foundation of endless homage to Patsy Cline. This month, she is out on a new release of tribute covers of Patsy Cline. Nora Jones is there, and Diana Krall, and Amy Grant, and many more. Patsy Cline's influence on uncounted singers who followed her is incalculable. But maybe no single career has been as shaped by and devoted to Patsy Cline's as K.D. Lang's. Tonight on Point, remembering Patsy Cline with K.D. Lang, who joins us now from Los Angeles. Good evening and welcome, K.D. Lang.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you with us. and it's a great connection to make. You're famous for it, but I have to admit I didn't really know the history, K.D. Lang, until I read into it for this show. Would you be good enough to take us back to, as I understand it, your college days, when somehow the Patsy Cline bug just bit you deep?
Mm-hmm. I was a performance artist. I was doing industrial punk music in Edmonton, Alberta.
Okay.
And I came out of college studying music. And when I got asked to do a musical theater piece, mm-hmm. I was around the age of 21.
Yeah.
And also on my 21st birthday, I got 2 Patsy Cline records. So these 2 things happened simultaneously that sort of caused an explosion of sorts in terms of my inspiration. And the part that I played in the musical theater piece mm-hmm. was fashioned after Patsy Cline. So then I started to listen to the music and study it. And this, like I said, this is coming from industrial punk and performance art. So.
Right.
I was coming from it from maybe a different door. I say I came sort of to country music through the back door kind of thing.
And yet you grew up in Alberta, so the kind of country twang was not exactly unfamiliar to you. Couldn't have been.
No, it was completely ingrained in my person, but it wasn't something that I necessarily appreciated.
Right.
And it was something that I saw as a limitation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny because when I actually found country music through Patsy Cline at the time of being a punk artist and a performance artist, that I really actually found that to be kind of limiting. There's no tradition in it, so
you mean suddenly the industrial performance art didn't seem to have the roots you needed.
Right. Mm. I needed something to play off of. So country music and Patsy Cline was something that just really intrigued me because of sort of the mindset of country music and the political, I guess, tradition of country music and it being sort of Christian and male and
right.
kind of a more conservative mindset that I found it infinitely interesting and full of potential for me to come in and as a Canadian Buddhist lesbian vegetarian.
Hello.
Yeah. That there was kind of a lot of potential there. So.
So off you went.
Off I went, but really through the vehicle of Patsy Cline and through the vehicle of her voice.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about that because you may have got those 2 records when you were 21 years old, but you had to have grown up with Patsy Cline in the air. I mean, you couldn't avoid it. You still can't avoid it in the United States or Canada, for that matter. Had you always heard it, and was it just background music? And what was the depth charge that went off when you sat with these 2 albums at 21?
I hadn't really heard it. The only time I remember hearing it was on a KTEL ad on TV.
Okay.
Because we had two radio stations. We had 1 television station.
Mm.
And the one radio station was country, and I didn't listen to that.
And not a media-rich environment then.
No, not. So I didn't really hear Patsy Cline until, I guess what happened was my siblings, my older siblings, fell in love with the movie Coal Miner's Daughter, and mm-hmm. they were like, oh, you've got to check out Patsy Cline. And I guess I had basically heard Patsy Cline through people like Linda Ronstadt and Emmylou Harris because I was listening to them
right.
at an early age.
Right.
So when I got those two records, I heard something in it that I don't know what happened. It really was like a spontaneous combustion. All of a sudden I had this visualization of how I could do country and how I could look, how I could feel, and how I could mix all these great different genres into one: rockabilly, jazz, country, rock, and bluegrass, and even, you know, the torch singing, all into one, because that's what I heard when I hear Patsy Cline.
But I wonder how you, as you say, I forget the whole line, but Buddhist, lesbian, anti-meat-eating, and all the rest, very modern, contemporary woman, without any of the burdens or constraints of a Southern housewife, what exactly was your path in? Was it camp? Or was it some genuine connection? It clearly has evolved into a very genuine connection.
Both. Definitely both. To me, I that's what I appreciate about Patsy Cline. To me, something has to have a sense of humor in order to be real.
Yeah.
Because I think that life itself is in equal parts irony, humor, sadness, happiness, beauty, ugliness.
Is
I think
ever,
that
yeah.
you can't separate that. And to me, you know, Patsy Cline had all of those things, especially in her voice. You know, there was truth in her voice, and all those things were contained.
There sure was. I want to listen to your cover of Patsy Cline's Leaving on Your Mind. But before we do that, this is off the new album coming out, Remembering Patsy Cline. But before we do that, let's hear just a little bit of Patsy Cline doing it. This is her last release before her death in March 1963. Patsy Cline, Leaving on Your Mind.
If you got leaving on your mind, got leaving on your mind. If there's a new love in your heart, tell me now, get it over. Hurt me now, get it over. If there's a new love in your heart.
Patsy Cline's Leaving on Your Mind. And now, before we even talk about it, let's jump right on into K.D. Lang's Leaving on Your Mind.
If you've got leaving on your mind, tell me now, get it over. Hurt me now, get it over. Hurt me now, get it over. If there's a new love in your heart, don't leave me here. Dreams that
Teddy Lang, it's beautiful. Of all the Patsy Cline songs you could have chosen to sing, why this one?
A lot of the other ones were already taken.
The hands were already raised.
The hands were already raised. Plus, I've already sung pretty much every Patsy Cline song there is at some point in my career. So this is one I felt like would be pretty beautiful. I did this really live. I did this. This is a complete live version. And
by live, you mean not heavily produced?
Not produced at all in one take. You know, just my bass, drums, and piano player and me just sitting there and doing a take. So I really didn't want to produce it because when something's so close to me, like Patsy Cline material, I just really feel like it's just about the emotional interpretation. It's not about making it better or worse or taking it and making it a disco song. It's really about just the emotional connection to the song. So I really just wanted to do something just straight up.
It comes through so loud and clear, and it's so immediately at once Patsy Cline and Teddy Lang. I'm struck by the way Patsy Cline, and maybe this is a product, a requirement of her time, so many of her songs had this chipper surface, but then an unbelievable depth. And you go right for that depth, that kind of almost opiate-drugged, you know, down on the floor with despair side of Patsy Cline here.
Well, I think that's pretty easy to figure out. Patsy was getting played on the radio, so everything she did was geared towards getting played on the radio. I've been very lucky in never being played on the radio, so I don't have to worry about being chipper.
But is that the side that pulled you in originally or now to Patsy Cline? I mean, you can imagine you know, there's a kind of blue velvet darkness behind a lot of Patsy Cline's songs, and we know she's got some tough personal history that's no doubt reflected there. Was that what called out to you, Teddy Lang?
I think that I, as a youngster, recognized that it was all-inclusive and that when I was doing my punk thing, it was completely accessible to me because I could play off the sort of the humor and the kitschiness and the, as you said, the upbeat and the sort of, you know, the beat in it. But as I get older, I can tap into the depth of the intensity and the irony and the sadness and all that.
You're with some amazing singers on this new album, Natalie Cole and Nora Jones and Amy Grant, Diana Krall and Michelle Branch, on and on. What was it like to hear each of them find their Patsy Cline voice?
It's wonderful. I really think that, you know, this compilation is just inkling of who has been influenced by Patsy Cline. I think that there's so many people that have been touched by the music of Patsy Cline in a way that I sort of always thought Patsy Cline probably influenced singers the way Hank Williams Sr. did writers.
Mm-hmm. The imprint is very deep. Teddy Lang, stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're going to go into it listening to Nora Jones off Remembering Patsy Cline singing Why Can't He Be You?
He takes me to the places you and I used to go. He tells me over and over that he loves me so. He gives me love that I never got from you. He loves me too, his love is true. Why can't he? Never fails to call and tell me I'm on his mind, and I'm lucky to have such a guy.
We're remembering Patsy Cline tonight with Teddy Lang, one of the artists who's bringing the legendary country singer's music to a new generation on the new CD, Remembering Patsy Cline. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
And I should love him so.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're remembering Patsy Cline tonight with K.D. Lang.
I fall to pieces each time I see you again.
Patsy Cline's I Fall to Pieces, her first real breakthrough hit in 1960. It was years later that, up in Alberta, Canada, K.D. Lang really got focused on Patsy Cline and made her the foundation of a career that's gone on and on. We're looking at Patsy Cline's career tonight and talking with K.D. Lang about the intersection of that career with her own. We're joined now from Nashville, Tennessee, by a biographer of Patsy Cline, Brian Mansfield. He's Nashville correspondent for USA Today and author of Remembering Patsy. Hello, Brian Mansfield.
Hi, Tom.
Brian, you've written a lot about Patsy, definitively about Patsy Cline. Is it in any way a surprise to you that all these years later, artists of the stature of K.D. Lang and everybody else in the lineup of this new album, Remembering Patsy Cline, is still deep in the web of Patsy Cline's music?
Well, I think what's interesting is that over the years, people continue to discover just how great those records are. I mean, they were really fabulous records, but just wave after wave, generation after generation, keep on discovering how good they were.
Could you give us a sense, the nutshell biography of Patsy Cline?
Well, she came from Winchester, Virginia. She was born in 1932, so she would have turned 71 this year. Mm. Her parents were married 6 days before she was born. Her dad left the family when she was 15, started performing locally, came to Nashville, released a couple of records that didn't really do anything, and then her career really took off when she performed on Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts. In 1957, she sang Walkin' After Midnight there, and that became a big country and pop hit. Most of the rest of the songs that people really know now, Crazy, Sweet Dreams, were recorded in 2 years, between 1961 and 1963. Then, of course, in March of 63 is when the plane went down near Camden, Tennessee.
She came from a tough family background, a difficult father, sexually abusive father, and a family that moved around a lot. How much do you see that in her songs?
Pretty much, if you talk to the people that knew her, they'll tell you that those songs were her life. And so you've got, like you mentioned before, that chipper surface and the despair that was a little bit deeper. You saw that. You saw the very brave front that she had to adapt to get through. And then, but you saw the real emotion that was underneath the surface. And I think that's one of the reasons that her songs still last, because you can hear both of those things at the same time in them.
K.D. Lang, you actually worked with, in your Shadowlands album, Owen Bradley, who produced a lot of Patsy Cline. And it, as I read back, was in a sense Patsy Cline's savior. He came in and really got her on the right track. What was it like to work with the same man who, you know, held the hand of Patsy Cline?
It was astonishing. I think really that's about as close as somebody could get, is to be there with in Bradley's barn with Owen Bradley and those basically a lot of the same musicians that played on the heyday in the 60s, 61, 62, 63. Mm-hmm. It was astonishing, and it was a spiritual event for me. And Owen was just a tremendous person, and I think that, you know, what Brian was saying about the records and how great they were and how they stand the test of time was really the collaboration between and the love between Owen and Patsy.
Owen is very complimentary of you, K.D. Lang, not surprising since he worked so closely with you, but put that aside. Don't stand on modesty here. What is it, what was it in Patsy Cline's day and in your own that Owen Bradley heard in her, heard in you? What does he look for in a singer that he found in each of you?
Well, I think the same thing in any good artist. I think that honesty and vulnerability and the ability to let whatever is caught inside of you to come out through your voice. And I think, you know, Owen was very, very gentle and very nurturing and really understood singers.
Brian Mansfield, where was Patsy Cline's career when Owen Bradley came into it? What role did he play with Patsy Cline?
Well, Owen pretty much produced her all along, even on the early records that didn't go anywhere. But the real key was when she got out of a bad record deal with Four Star Records, mm-hmm. and Owen got to bring her over to Decca. They got better material, and he was able to do things the way that he wanted from the start all the way to the finish. And that's where things really took off. One of Owen's biggest jobs was just to rein in that big voice. Because if you listen to her live recordings, like Live at the Cimarron Ballroom or from the Opry, you hear this big, boisterous singer who liked to have a big flourish on the end of the song. And Owen was all about keeping that energy but reining it in so that it was it's almost like this pent-up sensation that you get from listening to those records.
The Patsy Cline legend is that she was hospitalized as a child with rheumatic fever and came away from that experience with that voice that could knock down walls. Is that a true story, Brian Mansfield?
Well, I read quotes from her talking about that from interviews, and she said that it happened when she was 13 and that somehow the illness affected her throat, and she would say that she came out with a booming voice like Kate Smith's.
And then some. And part of what Owen Bradley did, as you say, was rein it in to give it that charge. Let's listen to a little more, some more interpretation. On the new album just coming out, Remembering Patsy Cline, Diana Krall sings Crazy. The first record that Patsy Cline recorded after a near-fatal car crash in Madison, Tennessee. Let's hear Patsy Cline's own version for just a second before Diana Krall.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling. Love me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for somebody new.
And now, the great Diana Krall from the new album, Remembering Patsy Cline.
Woo-wee. Why do I let myself worry? Wondering what in the world did I do? Could hold you. I'm crazy for trying, I'm crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you.
What a great version, and right away it's Patsy Cline, but it's also Diana Krall, that torchy, breathy jazz interpretation. Katie Lang, what do you hear when you hear Diana coming in on Crazy?
Oh, it's an amazing arrangement. I can't believe that she could afford strings with the budget they gave us. I'm, like, jealous.
Maybe that's out of her back pocket.
Yeah,
somebody must have owed her.
It's beautiful. Well, the thing is that between Owen and Patsy, they picked just stunning songs, stunning, stunning songs. And when you have them sung by someone like Patsy Cline, it's so easy to interpret after you hear the quintessential version like that. And it's nice because it's such a gift that a singer gives to the world when they really, really translate to a listener.
And you'd have to say Patsy Cline truly keeps on giving. Her greatest hit CD, the last I read, has sold 9 million copies and has been in the top of some Billboard chart for 500 weeks. It's incredible. I think Crazy, I read somewhere, is one of the top requested jukebox song of all time. It's got this sense, Brian Mansfield, of desperate love, but also maybe a sense of victimhood. Was Patsy Cline a victim in life?
I don't think so, really. I mean, she had a lot of hard things happen to her. So I guess in that sense, it was, but she didn't really have that victim mentality. You talk to the people that know her, and one of the things that they almost to a person will say in exactly these words is that she gave as good as she got.
If you were tough on Patsy, Patsy was tough on you?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the people that I talk to that knew Patsy will tell you three things, and they use exactly the same words every time. She gave as good as she got. She didn't take nothing from nobody, and she would tell you like it was.
Give us just a little sense of her love life, because, you know, love stories are, and facets of love are in so many of these songs. How rough, how tough, how good, how bad was it?
I think turbulent would be a good word to describe it. You know, she got married for the first time in 1953, and that was just a lot of trouble. There's a guy named Gerald Cline. The saying is that about all he left with her was her last name. Lasted 4 years. He didn't like her career, didn't want her to sing, wanted her to stay home. They'd fight. She'd move out. She'd move back in, then out again. Eventually, in 1957, when she was separated, she met Charlie Dick and then got divorced in 57, married him later that year. But even that was just back and forth. I mean, the fights are famous.
A lot of fire there. Patsy, I hear you in the background. Have you focused at all on the facts of Patsy Cline's life, or is the music fully sufficient for everything you've looked to?
You, me?
Yeah.
Katie?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Katie. Did I say Patsy? Forgive me.
You said
me.
Patsy. I'll take it, though.
Yeah, all right.
I focused a little bit, but to me, it was more about the music, and it was really everything I needed was in her voice. And I think, you know, I have my little fantasy of what she was like, and Owen told me stories and all that, but mm-hmm. there's so much to – there's volumes, her voice, you know, in her voice. So I don't know. I never get tired of the records.
I want to hear listen for just a second to a cut of yours, KD, that as we listened back to Shadowland, seemed like one of the most Patsy-ish on the album. Here's KD Lang singing I Wish I Didn't Love You, so her own song. KD Lang getting awfully darn close to Patsy Cline in I Wish I Didn't Love You So from her album Shadowland. KD, how do you think about this lifelong connection? Is it homage? Is it something else? How do you describe it to friends? How do you describe it to yourself?
That's a tough one because you're venturing into sort of a realm where people have very, very strong opinions.
Illuminate that for us.
Okay. I have to say that my connection to her and my obsession with her music and my understanding of her music emotionally, strictly on an emotional level, was so strong that I really think of myself as an incarnation. I really feel like she undoubtedly was the person who started the fire. And I wouldn't probably have I would have a career of some sort, but it really was started by Patsy Cline.
Katie, how literally do you mean that? You were born in 61, she died in 63. Are you channeling, or you're Buddhist? Do you really mean it?
Yeah, I do. I do really mean it. And time really has no relevance. It's about understanding and emulating and understanding. And making Shadowland was a way for me to sort of step out. And after Shadowland, I really sort of stepped back from the Patsy Cline thing because I realized that, it could be detrimental to my career, my obsession. And
kind
I really,
of whirlpool.
Yeah, and I didn't want to become Patsy Cline. I don't think I am Patsy Cline,
right.
But I think that I really wanted my generation, and certainly there's a tremendous amount of interest in Patsy Cline in the gay and lesbian community, and I really was just voicing that respect and love for her.
Why do you think that special interest in the gay and lesbian community? What's the special hook there?
Gay and lesbians don't have sort of a tradition that they can glom onto. And there was something liberal about Patsy Cline's energy and aura. And I think that they felt sort of nurtured by her voice.
Katie Lang, Brian Mansfield, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the great Patsy Cline with Katie Lang, who has made a good deal of a career in homage, maybe in incarnation of Patsy Cline.
She's you're being cynical.
Well, no, I'm not actually. I'll give you that. It's yours to decide. She's got a track on the new album, Remembering Patsy Cline, along with a lot of singers, including Michelle Branch, here singing Patsy Cline's Strange. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're remembering Patsy Cline tonight with Katie Lang. She's one of the artists who has covered Patsy on a new album, Remembering Patsy Cline. Here's Amy Grant with Back in Baby's Arms.
I'm back in baby's arms. How I miss the
Grant with Patsy Cline's Back in Baby's Arms. I'm joined tonight by Katie Lang in Los Angeles, and from Nashville, Tennessee, Brian Mansfield, Nashville correspondent for USA Today. Brian Mansfield, you must look with some amazement, awe, I don't know what you want to call it, at K.D. Lang's rooting in Patsy Cline. What do you think Patsy Cline would make of it all?
I think she would love K.D.'s music. I think that if she were still alive, she would sort of be the matriarch of the Grand Ole Opry today. She was really well known for taking singers like Loretta Lynn and Dottie West under her wing. I think they'd probably be best of friends.
And K.D., she kind of rode the line there of pop and country. Do you think she would have stayed in that vein, or might she have spread out?
I think if she would have stayed with Owen, she probably would have expanded a little bit more. I mean, she was one of the very first country artists to cross over in the contrapolitan sort of ilk of country music. I think she probably would have ventured towards a little more of the jazz crooning style. Mm-hmm. But she was pretty stuck on the hillbilly thing, too, so I don't know. I can only guess.
Well, Brian, there was an arc, a direction here, wasn't there? I mean, in her first years of singing, she was much deeper in the rockabilly sound than in the years of her big hits, was she not?
Right, exactly. And that's was one of Owen's main missions for her, was to get her where she could sing not only in those venues, but also in your higher class nightclubs and showrooms, things like that. Very similar to what he ended up doing with Brenda Lee, mm-hmm. I think, who also started out as a rockabilly singer. And she died in 63. She would have probably had crossover hits for another year until the Beatles showed up, and then, you know, probably rode that line between country music and nightclubs. Vegas would have probably been a really good place for her for a long time.
Patsy Cline came out of a conservative country tradition in the 50s. Did she speak, Brian Mansfield, of feeling constrained by the industry around her, the men around her, the music she was given?
I don't think she thought of it in any kind of political sense, like we kind of look back at. She was very headstrong. She was going to do what she wanted to do. And that, I think, is one of the things that made her such a great role model, because that movie came out, Sweet Dreams came out, right at the time that a bunch of today's country singers like Trisha Yearwood, Leanne Womack, Terry Clark were teenagers. And you know, she made a great role model for the women who would take country to a bigger audience than it had ever seen before.
And now everybody's interpreting. Let's get a little more of that. Here's Martina McBride with Take Six, covering Patsy Cline's Sweet Dreams.
Sweet dreams of you. Every night I go through. Why can't I forget you and start my life? Instead of having sweet dreams about you.
Martina McBride backed up with Take Six in a cappella. Brian Mansfield, when people describe what it was that distinguished Patsy Cline from the pack, how have people articulated that distinction? What is it?
That she was able to do so much more than everybody else. She was able to do the hillbilly stuff, the rockabilly stuff, but she was also able to do the torchy style. So, I mean, there really is something for everybody in her, but it's also the story. I mean, you can't hear the music without hearing the tragedy, and that just gives it an extra depth of resonance.
And K.D. Lang, when you hear other singers from her day, how would you describe the thing about Patsy Cline that sets her apart?
Patsy, to me, had a strength and an openness, an honesty. I really feel that she was sort of a pioneer emotionally. And for a woman singer in the 50s, especially in the country music genre, I think she just stood out. And it's just indelible over the course of country music and music history.
Well, that's as good as an accolade gets. Brian Mansfield, I want to thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you. I've enjoyed being here.
Brian Mansfield is the biographer of Patsy Cline. His book is Remembering Patsy. And K.D. Lang, it's just been a tremendous pleasure. Thanks so much for taking us on the Patsy Cline ride.
Thank you.
K.D. Lang is among a dozen artists covering Patsy Cline songs on the new album Remembering Patsy Cline. We'll go out listening to the old original Patsy Cline singing Sweet Dreams. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Sweet dreams of you every night I go through. Why can't I forget you and start my life anew instead of having sweet dreams all about you?
In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. But first, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
Had Mr. Estrada answered questions, we would have had a real debate about whether Mr. Estrada is qualified for a lifetime appointment to the second most powerful court in the nation.
An honorable immigrant American has been turned away because of the rankest political partisanship.
Because the penalty phase of the trial was conducted by a judge and not a jury, that was unconstitutional, and therefore their death sentence is reversed.
The FBI is still puzzled over the bizarre death of a Pennsylvania pizza delivery man who robbed a bank and then died when a bomb locked around his neck exploded.
The state's seeking the death penalty, and I feel very honored that they're most likely going to kill me for what I did. To be quite honest, I'm expecting a great reward in heaven.
He was a very skilled actor. There's just something about an actor's personality that comes through before the camera. He had a very strong personality. It could be menacing or heroic.
Let's talk frankly about the political situation, Abbas said. I can't deny that there are some problems in the relationship between the government and the presidency.
The economy is beginning to grow, and that's what I'm interested in. I come with an optimistic message. I believe there are better days ahead for people who are working and looking for work.
From the very beginning, the United States has been aggressively working to see that a great many countries from around the world are involved.
There are already 30 nations standing side by side with us in Iraq. And we hope with this new resolution, more nations will be encouraged to become a part of this noble effort.
La proposition de résolution telle que nous la connaissons aujourd'hui.
We are ready to study the proposed resolution in a positive way, of course. But the reality is that it is far from the priority objective.
We have to form an international coalition to get it done. This president is a miserable failure.
I think there's a failure of leadership because this president did not, in fact, pass that test in the way he rushed to the war.
This president is going to have to go back to the very people he humiliated, our allies, on the way into Iraq, and hope that they will now agree with us. We were wrong to go in without the United Nations. Now we need their help, and that's not a surprise.
And there's a week, Bush judicial nominee Miguel Estrada withdraws his name from consideration for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, a one-time anticipated Supreme Court nominee one day. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco commutes the death sentences of over 100 inmates in three states because their sentences were handed down by a judge and not a jury. The FBI continues to investigate the bizarre bank robbery and explosives death of Pennsylvania pizza delivery man Brian Wells. Abortion doctor killer and former Presbyterian minister Paul Hill is executed in Florida. Actor Charles Bronson dies at the age of 81. Embattled Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas challenges the Palestinian Authority to back his efforts to stop armed conflict with Israel. President Bush on Labor Day predicts brighter days ahead for the U.S. economy. Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, and Jacques Chirac on the American effort to draft the new U.N. resolution for international assistance in Iraq, and Democratic presidential candidates Dick Gephardt, John Kerry, and Howard Dean blast President Bush in a debate held yesterday in New Mexico. Jack Beatty, some real leaning on the wheel this week in Bush administration policy on both the Iraq front and with North Korea.
Yes, and I think fundamental to it is the return of Colin Powell. You know, since the statue of Saddam fell, President Bush has come down 25 points in the polls. And that is much on his mind. The people who got him into this are the neocons, Rumsfeld, Cheney, Wolfowitz. And they have been, you might say, discredited by their fruits. And this has given Powell a chance to get back into policy. He's changed the policy with the UN. We're going to try to get help from them. Whether we'll be able to or not, I don't know. But at least we're, just 2 weeks ago, we were saying, no, we're not going to go to the UN.
No way, no how, never.
Absolutely. And similarly with Korea, instead of saying it's all or nothing, you either take all your missiles and you know, destroy them and then we can talk. The administration says, well, maybe we can do an incremental thing, tit for tat. You'd make this step. We can give you this favor or we can do this in terms of energy, whatever it might be.
It's a very significant turn, but a lot still to play out there because these neocon players are still very much in their positions in Washington. And it's hard to imagine them just sitting down or going home. Bush has a lot of tussle under the tent there still to go. And then last night in Albuquerque, Jack, a lot of Democrats up on the stage debating one another, but most of all, as it turns out, taking on President Bush. I didn't get to see that. You did. What did you make of the performances?
Well, I tell you, Dick Gephardt seemed to have had a heart transplant. The mildest of men. He was known in the House of Representatives as a good listener. His favorite word, apparently, was mm-hmm. Well, he just teed off on Bush last night. He said not once but twice he's a miserable failure. And really sort of set the rhetorical bar for the other candidates who tried to match him in Kerry, with a very snide swipe at Bush. He said, wouldn't it be nice to have a president who could find the countries of this hemisphere on a map? It went on like that. But it was Gephardt and his anger. He's clearly competing with Howard Dean in Iowa, and what's working for Dean there is anger at the Bush administration. So you see it from Dick Gephardt.
How did Dean look last night? He's supposed to be the front runner now. Was he carrying that flag?
I thought he seemed very competent. He was efficient in his answers. He stumbled a little bit. He tends toward overstatement, and it's not good when it's on foreign matters because it makes him seem thin in his resume. Mm. And he did that once about trade standards in international negotiations, as with NAFTA, for example. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't attacked other than by Lieberman, and Lieberman being attacked by Lieberman is like being mugged by a dead sheep. So he got off unscathed. You know, to me, the significant thing about the debate was the forum. It was really all about Hispanic Americans, the last third of it, and the issue of amnesty for the illegal immigrants.
Yes.
Was right to the fore, and all the candidates committed to one form or another of that, a very sweeping change for Hispanic Americans.
The demographics of this country working their way right through the debate there. Jack Beatty, have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Julie Jopp, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Sarah Cook. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for the